From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
Welcome to another episode of PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill, and I'm joined by my co-host, Sarah Sinclair. Sarah, what's up? How is your week going so far?
My week is very busy, but I did actually get a chance to throw in my new backyard. So I threw some new discs that Innova sent me that I'm going to maybe try out at Women's Nationals. That's probably a bad idea.
Just go with it. Just roll
with
it.
Why not, though? My season's been kind of...
You have enough space where you can actually throw in your whole backyard. That's such a foreign concept to someone who lives in California.
Yeah, we bought a house with 5 acres and moved in about 2 weeks ago. So Sean, my husband, mowed enough. I think he mowed about 800 feet, so I can only get one drive in at this point. Just kidding. I can get like 3 drives in. but we've got 3 baskets right now, and we'll probably just make a couple holes and move around. It'll kind of act as my practice facility.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do the math in my head to figure out, like, I have, like, one, like, in the, like, 25th of that is for my yard or something like that.
Gotta move to Nashville.
I was actually just going out of the 800 feet. Crazy. No, I'll stick with California, thank you. But Nashville does sound pretty cool. All right, we've got some stuff on the show this week. Sarah, the thing I'm really excited about on the program this week is I had a chance to talk to one of the legends of our sport, Barry Schultz. First interview I've ever done with him, and it was a blast. So we're going to play that in a little bit. Reason we're interviewing Barry Schultz, U.S. Masters Championship was over the weekend up in Maple Hill, and he won that one. That is his 7th U.S. Masters Championship.
Wow.
And his 14th career major. He joined the 14 career major club alongside Elaine King, who also won. Any real surprises there for you, Sarah, hearing those two names at the top of the leaderboard from the Tim Zielinski U.S. Masters?
I would say there was no surprise with Elaine King winning, but Barry Schultz had a pretty stacked division. I mean, he was going up against Michael Johansson, Steve Rico, Dave Fellberg, Mike Mosier. There's some dudes that are pretty good at disc golf that are getting into that 40.
I was gonna say we're in this kind of cool zone now where like some of the not that we haven't ever been in this cool, but like the you've got the MP40 field is relatively loaded right now.
I agree. I'm not surprised that he won, but he definitely didn't. You know, he had some challenge, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah,
he won by
3 strokes,
so it wasn't a landslide by any means.
No, and I think there were a couple shorter courses there. They played, like, Maple Hill Whites, and then they played this course called Newton Hill, which, by all accounts, was, like, possibly too short. Took, like, 2 hours and 20 minutes to play too short.
Oh, wow.
But then they had this 501 disc golf course, which was being compared to, like, a mini Iron Hill. Very Ooh. Similar terrain with boulders. I know Todd Lyon called me up and gave me the lowdown on it. He said it was phenomenal.
Cool.
Really, really sung the praises of that course. And then obviously they played Maple Hill Golds the final round.
I got a chance to watch the coverage that Gatekeeper Media put out. I am super impressed with it. The commentary was great. All the graphics were great. The video work was amazing. But they played a shorter version of Maple Hill.
Yeah, that was the Whites.
Okay, and I would argue that was almost too short as well.
It was very deuce or die, right?
Yes, yes. And they were shooting like 10, 9, 10, 11 under par. I don't think at this point, or maybe while we're recording, Gatekeepers put out the footage for the gold layout, but I'm excited to see how they play that.
Yeah. It should be a good watch. The Gatekeeper guys have really elevated their game over time. So, nice to have another PDGA major in the books from over the weekend. And so I guess let's just do this, Sarah. Let's get straight into, I'm getting ahead of myself. We should also congratulate Patrick Brown, who won the MP50 division. I don't know how, because Patrick Brown doesn't look a day over like 34.
I know, it blows my mind. He's ageless.
It's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Bobby Jones took down the MP55 crowd. Johnny Sias, MP60. Dr. Rick Vokes, your boy, taking down the MP70+. And then a handful of other amateur masters winners. Ray Hill, Elizabeth Borg Bowman, Billy Ray Osborne, James Elkins, Mark Hauser, Dave Linger are the other Masters, U.S. Masters champions. So congratulations to all of the winners from everyone out there in Maple Hill. And now I think would be a good time to listen to my conversation with Barry Schultz. I want to give people a little bit of a, kind of an intro. Like, I was pretty stoked with how this interview came out just because Barry was like, he's very soft-spoken and mild-mannered, but also like just has some awesome takes on where the sport is. He's seen so much, obviously. It was honestly like a privilege for me to be able to chat with him. So I'm stoked to play that. So we're going to go right now to my chat with Barry Schultz, and Sarah and I will come back and do some more on the show here on PDJ Radio. All right, welcome to PDJ Radio, the United States Masters Disc Golf Champion for a staggering seventh time this weekend, Mr. Barry Schultz. Barry, thanks for joining the show. How are you?
I'm doing all right, Steve. How are you?
Awesome, man. Thank you. You know, so much that we can talk about. Let's start with U.S. Masters over the weekend.
Sure.
You know, what was the experience like for you there? I know this was you love the wooded courses. There were some wooded tracks here. What was the overall event like for you this weekend?
Well, we had the MVP Open beforehand, the week before, so I got up there early and played in that event. And to be honest, I kind of didn't do my homework before I got up there. I kind of heard through grapevine that we were playing just Maple Hill and 501, and I heard good things about 501, so I didn't really worry too much about practice. But once I got up there and started getting ready for the MVP, I showed up a little late for that Wednesday as well on that. I went through the process of making sure I knew what was going on for this week and the next week, and realized that we were playing four courses for the Tim Selinski the following week. So I had to kind of organize my thoughts and kind of, you know, gather myself and get ready for four practice rounds out there. I was a little disappointed in that fact, but because I love those woods courses so much, I hadn't been to 501 before, but I heard many, many good things about it, and I was not disappointed when I got there myself. Like you said, I'm a woods golfer, and I always look forward to going up to that course, Maple Hill, because it suits my game quite well. I mean, you still have to be able to throw far, you still have to be able to hit your mark as well. So I enjoy going up there.
I was going to say, what was the difference? You know, did you have a preference between playing the whites or the golds? I know you guys ended up playing both at Maple Hill.
Well, to be honest, I never played anything but the golds out there. Every time I've been up there for either the Marshall Streets or the Vibram or now the Maple or the MVP, we've always played along as toughest layout. And I got no problem with that. But to be honest, I really kind of like a deuce or die layout when I play average everyday golf, you know, when I'm not playing tournament golf. So when I got the chance to play the whites, I thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, as a tournament player, as a traveler, I'm not thrilled with having to play four courses and study four courses to get ready for a weekend. But at the same time, that's my kind of golf. I like throwing slow and smooth, not having to throw my farthest, you know, more than once or twice on a course, being able to hit my lines and hopefully have a putt for birdie more often than not. That's the kind of golf I like. So I thoroughly enjoyed playing the whites. It was a little bit of a trickiness getting used to some of those blind basket placements and some of those hills that we don't always get to play on old layout, but it was definitely a good balance for the gold, for sure.
Now, this is obviously the Tim Selinski U.S. Masters Championship. My bet is there are quite a few listeners who maybe don't know Tim's legacy, didn't have a chance to meet him. Obviously, you guys were very close. How much does this mean to you to keep winning this event with his name on it?
Well, when Tim started running this U.S. Masters years ago, he saw a need and he filled it. Well, that's kind of what Tim did. You know, he made the conversation he was having with you the most important one he was having that day. and he tried his best to make sure that you were moving forward after that conversation. And I think when he saw this need for this Masters Championship, he really put his heart and soul into it and made sure that Innova was behind it as well. He was kind of the front man for Innova back in those days in the 80s and 90s. And he was the one that I probably talked to the most at Innova Champion when I would call and have questions and comments and just thoughts and stuff. And he was actually the one person that helped me realize that quitting my normal everyday job and becoming a professional disc golfer was a good thing. It wasn't a selfish thing. It wasn't something that I should shy away from. If that's something that I thought about, I should pursue it. So I did. So all you guys have him to thank for me going out there and giving 100% like I did in the 2000s. Being able to have Innova, I fly the Innova flag, and having Innova hold that championship that's named after Tim means a lot to me. And this year, I didn't even realize it until I got up there to Maple Hill area, but it has a deeper meaning at Maple Hill because, unfortunately, the timing of the whole aspect of Tim getting sick and falling ill and passing, I was on that property by 18's basket at Maple Hill when I found out that Tim had passed. So
wow.
I didn't even really realize that memory until I got up there and thought about the whole, you know, let's play for Tim and be Tim-like. You know, that's one thing I try and do every week or every year during the week of the Tim Selinski is be Tim-like. Really enjoy every moment, enjoy everybody's energy, try and stay as positive as I can, and realize that a bad break or a bad shot is just another chance for greatness or for bouncing back and finding out who I am and who I can be. Trying to find my Tim that week, I had that memory of finding out that he had passed on 18's green, and I didn't even know it really could happen, but it made the event mean even more that week to me because I had those feelings and that event on that property. So it kind of snuck up on me a little bit there from time to time, but it was great to be able to have that energy and that want and come through and have that win for Tim and for Innova.
Now, you mentioned that Tim was one of the first people who encouraged you to do disc golf full time. I think maybe people don't realize that you were kind of one of the old school kind of OG guys to get out there and do this as a full living. Is it true? Were you working at a plastic injection molding facility before this?
I work with plastic. I play with plastic. That's what I always used to say when I was working in the factory. I worked in a plastic factory called Bemis Manufacturing. And they did a lot of injection molding, but I actually worked in the extrusion portion of the plant. So it's still plastic. Plastic is a fickle beast every day. It's different. Injection molding is a die closes, it fills up. 10 seconds later, a minute later, it opens up and you have a piece. While extrusion is just constant running of the plastic. The machine is always running. So it's a little bit different, but it's still, you're running plastic and you're making plastic do what you want or don't want to do. So I thoroughly enjoyed that part of my life because it was different every day because plastic isn't the same every day. So I understand some of the issues that some of these manufacturers are having, you know, when they are trying to get into the business. You know, now there's 25 manufacturers and they're all trying something new and different and they think it's going to be easy and realize that the plastic industry is not easy whatsoever. Plastic acts different every day, every hour. And what you think works one day doesn't necessarily work the next day. So it's a fickle beast. But I thoroughly have enjoyed working and playing with plastic most of my life.
So, you know, you've had this long and illustrious career. I mean, you've won 7 U.S. Masters, 2 Open World Championships, 3 USDGCs. The list goes on and on. I think this was your 14th major victory over the weekend.
That sounds about right. I didn't realize that until I read the article.
But there's still, I feel like there's still probably for the amount of pedigree and history that you have in the sport, we're also in kind of a new era of fans and followers of disc golf who maybe don't know as much about your background. And I'll even include myself in that. I mean, I've seen your name on discs since as soon as I got into playing the sport, but,
sure.
You know, I'm still unfamiliar with a lot of your history. So how did we get from you know, playing with plastic in the factory to, you know, making the jump to full time and, you know, just kind of give us your, that origin story. What was that jumping off point for you to actually really dive in and do this full time?
Well, I started playing disc golf when I was in my, you know, preteen, 10 or 11 years old. And it was always kind of part of my summer life. You know, I was always into other sports. So during the school year, I didn't always play a lot of disc golf. But when summer came around, I always played a lot of disc golf. And once I got my license as a teenager, I started traveling to tournaments. You know, back in the late 80s, there was only, you know, four or five, six tournaments per state, it seemed. So sometimes you really had to hunt and peck to find your event and go play it. But I did that a little bit. And once I got in my 20s, I started playing more events. I was playing, you know, 15 or 20 events a year and doing quite well. And I was running events. My course pro in Sheboygan, Wisconsin passed when I was 16. So we didn't have anybody selling discs at our course. So I kind of stepped up with a couple other guys and started a disc selling company. So I was selling discs. I was running leagues. I ran some PDJ events and I was having success all across the board, not only as a player, but as a TD. And I thought, well, I can keep doing this and make it bigger and keep going. And my job at the time didn't give me paid vacation, but it gave me the time off that I, you know, without pay, as long as I covered my responsibilities elsewhere on the job, I was fine. So I just traveled more and more. And late 90s, it got to the point where I was making some good money, you know, decent money on the weekends. And I thought, you know, I don't know if I could do it for 2 years or 10 years, whatever the case is, but I should think about doing this. And I reached out to friends and family and thought, see what their thought process was on it all. And I think, like I said earlier, Tim is the one that kind of pushed me over the edge. I thought it was a possibility, and I thought it might be somewhat honorable to try and do something like this for, you know, a couple of years, whatever the case is. But until I talked with Tim and had their help, and I wouldn't even say financially, but just that they were supportive behind me and would help me if I needed help in a moment's notice. So it was really stressful at times because I was saving money and working hard trying to buy a home and property. And I thought to myself, okay, do I quit my job and go on tour and live my retirement, or do I keep doing what I'm doing and buy a home and property and save that traveling for later? And I thought, well, I'm not really guaranteed any later whatsoever, so I might as well go for it. And I'm glad I did, because the housing market has kind of taken a couple of dips and falls, so I may not have the beautiful home that I thought I might have when I quit my job. So, you know, it's been stressful. Anybody that travels for a living and anybody that has performance-based income for a living knows that it's not always easy, but I get to see this great country, see a lot of awesome people, see a lot of smiling faces, and I get to play a game for a living. So I tell people that I'm living my retirement now because I'm not guaranteed a retirement when I'm 65 or 70. You know, so I'm stressed at times because it is a stressful job traveling and doing performance-based income, but at the same time, it's absolutely beautiful and wonderful. I get to do what I love for a living. So I'll take the downs when they come, because the ups are very wonderful.
That's awesome. You know, so how did you, I know you're out in North Carolina now, right? How did it, was that just kind of the natural evolution of, hey, I can play here a little more year round, a little better weather? You were up in Wisconsin before, right? So, I mean, yes, was that a factor, weather and location, things like that?
Absolutely. Up until about 2010 or 2011, I was living in Wisconsin. And if I wanted to play year round, I basically had to travel year round. And the older I got, the less I liked being on the road for, you know, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14 weeks in a row. I would much rather do 2, 3, 4 weeks, go home for a week or two, go out for 2, 3, 4 weeks, you know, do that cycle. But living in Wisconsin, there just weren't enough events at the beginning of the year, at the end of the year, that really made it easy for me to travel and do things like I wanted to do. So I thought, why not move south? And just so happened that Jonathan Poole, an Innova East employee of our team director and the USDGC tournament director, had kind of an opening at his home in Rock Hill and thought maybe I could rent the room out, and I did, and it's been wonderful. The first year I came down, just because I could, I either threw discs or swung the clubs. I'm a ball golfer as well as a disc golfer. I made sure I threw the disc or swung the clubs every day between Thanksgiving and spring, essentially. So for like 150, 200 days in a row, I played disc golf in some way, just because I couldn't do that up north in Wisconsin for that time of year. In Wisconsin, I love the winters, but come February and March, you're so ready for winter to be over. If winter was over in the middle of January, it would have been great and would have stayed up there, but I just can't play golf for a living November through March up in Wisconsin as easily as I could down here. So that's why I moved down here. I thought maybe I could get a different everyday normal job as well. And that just never panned out. I tried. I had a couple of small jobs, but manufacturing is really different than it was 15 to 20 years ago. And being in the South now versus in the North, where I was in Wisconsin, laborers and unions really have a strong foothold up north, and they don't down here. So things are really different for hiring manufacturing. So they weren't really willing to give me a full-time benefits or full-time salary. So I'm like, I can kind of struggle and not love my financial situation and play disc golf for a living. I don't want to be in that situation and have a normal job. So I tried to go back to a normal job a couple of times and it just didn't work out for me. So I'll come back to disc golf and keep trying.
It is your normal job now.
It sure is.
I love it. Man, that's amazing. That's so great. What's your take then on kind of the you've obviously got to see a lot of evolution in the game and everything. What's your take on kind of the current state of the pro side with, you know, touring and media and stuff like that? We had kind of a fun email exchange real quick around Worlds about like feature cards and stuff.
Let me back up into the 2000s when disc speeds were really taking off and our courses were kind of starting to be a little obsolete and the tour was starting to be a little more popular, a little stronger, instead of a couple of waves. You know, early 2000s, there was probably only two or three waves of a tour. There'd be a spring tour, then a summer tour, maybe a fall tour. There wasn't really a whole big tour. And now that there's a full tour and people are really excited to get the top golfers to come to their city, and people are really improving their courses and stuff, part of the reason why I stopped traveling as much back in the late 2000s was because it's hard traveling full time, and the golf was kind of getting away from what I considered fun everyday golf. When I would come to a city that I'd been to, you know, 4 or 5 years in a row, and we get there the next year, and all of a sudden here we have new tee pads, we have new baskets, we have new courses, we have new this, new that. People take from what they see. USGC, we have fake out of bounds, we have fake ponds, we have all this stuff added to it. And it wasn't as much fun, or I guess you could say earthy golf. It was more forced and not real natural golf. And it's not what I love. It's not that I don't like it, but I don't want to do that every weekend. So I kind of stopped traveling as much in the 2000s. Sure. And now you fast forward from say 2008 to 2019, and everything is almost 10 times more so as far as speed and distance, and we need space for galleries, we need space for cameras. In the 2000s, I would say tournament directors and course designers would not really design a course for the top guys. They would design a course for the meat of the field. We would never design a shot or a course or a hole for the camera. And now, I would think more often than not, instead of rarely, we're designing courses and shots and things for the camera and for the top guys and for those top distance shots instead of for the field. And I think it's losing some polish. It's gaining polish in some areas because we're able to get the crowds out there. We're able to get the cameras out there to get to see the masses see our game. But to be honest, it's not the same beautiful natural game that it was for the last 20 years that can kind of draw people in. I've talked to people that have done some of this touring over the last couple of years, and I call it the gentrification of disc golf. Kind of like cities are being gentrified where they're improving it, but they're taking away parts of what makes a city as well, what gives them that home style feel, what separates them from other cities. And I think some disc golf courses are doing that now. They're improving their courses and getting them ready for the big events and the big arms and stuff like that, but they're kind of losing some of their hometown feel of what made them special compared to other cities. So I'm not traveling as much as I would like to because it's harder as I get older. But part of it is also the golf isn't as much fun as I'd like it to be. It's constantly 450 and 500 foot shots. And there's a place for that, and we need that. But for me, that's not what I want to do every weekend. So I'm picking and choosing my disc golf schedule a little bit more based on the golf that I want to play versus that I need to play or have to play, so to speak. So it's now, come a long way.
Do you think that that's going to have... Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, do you think that's going to have any long-term ramifications, positive or negative? I mean, obviously, you mentioned the positives, more media, more exposure, more people hopefully playing, but do you think there's any downsides to that then?
I think, personally, there's some downsides for me, but I think as a sport, I think there's also some downsides. I think people see these shots and these courses on camera and on video. They see these top guys playing it, and they may go to their home course, whether they're a mover or shaker or not, whether they're a volunteer or whether they're a league runner or whether they show up for course days or not. They want what they see on their own course. And I don't think there are a lot of courses that are out there that are built or able to take the gentrification of the sport to a good level. A lot of times our courses are put into kind of junk areas of parks and stuff. There's not a lot of spare space for us to improve. So if we try and, I think a lot of it has to do with score, unfortunately. People don't like seeing everybody under par. And I think a fair course is being confused for an easy course. And I think when we move this forward to the tour, the gentrification of this golf for the event that's coming to your town, I think instead of making it fun for everybody and giving everybody a chance to do well in that event, you're actually limiting the amount of people that are going to have fun and limiting the amount of people that are going to have a chance to do well at that event. Because when you just put skill into the play. Yes, the best players are always going to be the best players no matter what course you put them on. But if you bring luck into play as well as the skill, if you have to have good luck and good skill to do well, then you cut the field in half of those people that are going to do well. Because if I'm a 980 or a 1010 rated player and I love this course and I have fun at this course, I come to this course and I have a good weekend, I should do well. But if they gentrify the course before I get there, because the tour is coming, Joe at 990 or 1010 has a good weekend, he's still not going to do well because he's going to have to get lucky as well as do well to have those top scores. So I think a tournament director or a tournament staff is really have to be on the lookout of what they want from their event. Do they want the top pros to come and keep coming back? Do they want everybody to come and keep coming back? Do they want to be the toughest test in their state? They want it to be the funnest test in the state. They want it to be, they have to figure out what they want from their event and guide their decision making on what they want from their event. There's an event in Wisconsin that I loved back in the day, Manitowoc in the Park. I'll use it as an example. And it was a small do-or-die event, had some great growth, got bigger every year, but kind of capped out. Well, the tournament staff and the tournament people there wanted more from their event, so they wanted to get the tour pros in there. So what they did was they made their courses longer, went to different courses, longer courses where it's not 10 or 12 under every time. And I don't necessarily know why the tour pros don't want to go to those courses, but I guess they don't. So they made those changes to where the tour pros are coming in and they get those guys coming. It may not be all 50 of the tour guys coming every year, but they get half guys come in almost every year, and they have clinics and demos, they have all kinds of things, and it's great and wonderful. They made those changes according to what they want out of their event, and it's good. If they didn't want that out of their event, if they wanted to have that small, fun atmosphere like they had when it was called Manitowoc in the Park, then I would say that they made mistakes when it became the Silver Cup, and they made all these big changes to have more money and more distance and more challenge. But because that's what they wanted from their event, they made all the perfect decisions. They did wonderful. So I just want course directors and tournament staffers to be aware that don't just do things because everybody else is doing them. don't just make your course long because of course, because that's the tourists coming to town. We still want to have fun. We still want to have fair, good golf. So decide what you want from your event and then make those decisions based on what you decide, what you want your event. So don't be afraid, you know, just because everybody's under par doesn't mean it's easy. So we want to have everybody to have fun. So I think if you have the bottom half of the field struggling at par versus 25 or 40 over par, they're going to have fun and they're going to come back next year. Where sometimes if they're struggling at 40 over par, they're not going to come back the next year. And we still need those bottom half of the fields to come in and support and lift the top half of the field up. And we can't have a good, you know, high paying event if we don't have the people. So if we only have 72 people, you're going to cap off where how many people you can pay and all, and how many how many people come and stay in your city, you know. So people look at money and people look at money spent in the city and money given out at the events. And the more people you have at your event, the more people, more money you can give away and the more money is spent in your city. So make your, you know, decide what you want from your event and make those decisions accordingly, I guess.
All right, Barry, what I like to do with people who it's their first time on the show is I like to end our interviews with the lightning round, where I just hit you with a bunch of quick questions and you give me the first answer that comes to your mind. Are we ready? Oh, he's taking a drink of water. I love it. All right, man, let's do this. I'm hitting, this is going to be a surprise first timer for listeners. I'm putting in a new one in there today too. Okay. So, right. And it's a good one, I think. So, all right. Hopefully, first up, your favorite course on tour.
Favorite course on tour. Wow. Yeah, I get that question a lot, and it's hard to say. You almost have to give me more specific of a question. You know, everyday course, tournament course, fun course, hard course, easy course. You know, that's
favorite,
such a
give me tournament
question.
Course. Favorite tournament.
My favorite tournament course would almost have to be Dretzka Park in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Okay. Most difficult tournament course?
Boy. The easy and obvious answer is USDGC Winthrop Gold. But, you know, yeah, I'll have to stay with it. Because it's from beginning to end, from first year to the 20th year, it's been right up there, so I'll have to stick. I'll stick with it. With the gold.
Okay. Most overrated tournament course.
Wow. Who do I want to get mad at me? Most overrated tournament course. Only because I don't like throwing far. I'd almost have to say Eureka Lake in Peoria.
Okay. All right. Your favorite food on tour. When you go hit the road, what's one place you gotta eat?
It's kind of strange. I guess not really strange. But I try and find different pizza almost everywhere I go. I love me some pizza. Thin crust, deep dish, New York, Sicilian. Just put anything. I don't mind chains. I don't like my mom and pops. So right. I try to just put anything.
Nice. All right. This is the new question.
Okay. All right.
I think it's a good one for you to answer if you can. This one's always floating around on the internet. Greatest disc golfer of all time.
Greatest disc golfer of all time. I have to go with the obvious answer, and to me, it's not just because it's obvious, just because it's true. I have to say Ken Climo. I mean, he did it over a growth of the disc golf life. I mean, he did it with the courses were growing. He did it when the discs were growing. He did it for 12 or 14 years in a row. He did it in windy. He did it in hot. He did it. The only place he didn't do it was cold, because he's a Floridian. He, you know, cold is his kryptonite. You know, I would say, you know, if I had a couple more successes in some of the majors, I would like to throw my hat in there. And I think, you know, guys that are going now, if Paul and Ricky can keep their success going for more, I think they could be thrown in that. But just because of his longevity, I think you could break, you know, Paul's been doing it for what, 6 years, 7 years in that range has been his time frame. You could put almost any 6 or 7 year frame of Kenny's history, and I don't think Paul is going to blow him away or anything like that. If anything, Kenny would blow his Paul stats away at times. So the only thing that would give any credence to saying Paul or even Ricky would be there's much stiffer competition nowadays than there was back in the mid-90s. Not just because I wouldn't say that there's a sheer greater number of good disc golfers. There's just a sheer number, a greater number of good disc golfers playing tournaments and traveling for a living. There have always been great golfers everywhere. It's just they're not always traveling and playing events like they are now. It's hard to find a good slash great disc golfer that's not playing in leagues or events now. Where back in the day, I would say half the good players didn't even play in leagues or events back then. So just because of the exposure factor, there's so many more golfers playing events that there's more competition on a daily basis, for sure.
All right, I like it. All right, if you could pick any superpower, what would it be?
Ooh, boy. I could pick any superpower, what would it be? I'd like to say invisibility, but then you still have to travel and do everything the same way anyway, you know? So, you know, as a disc golfer, flying is the obvious answer just because we like to watch a disc fly so much. And, you know, when you throw that disc just right, you almost feel like you're flying with it sometimes. I'd almost have to say flight. I'd have to say flight, for sure.
All right. You're trapped on a desert island. You can only watch one movie the rest of your life. Oh, what's boy. It going to be?
Oh, boy. That's a tough one there. You know, do you go serious or do you go funny? You know.
It's the hard part about the lightning round, man.
Do you want to be entertained? Do you want to push yourself mentally? Or do you just, you know. I have a handful of favorite movies. It almost have to depend on what you're watching it on too, you know. So, you know, if you're just watching it on a small screen, you have to go simple. If you got a big screen with a nice theater, you can go something huge. And
you're trapped on a desert island. We'll give you a big right? screen.
Something, yeah. Well, I'd almost have to say just because I want everything, I wanna be entertained all across the board. I'd almost have to say, which do I go? I don't know. I'm taking too much. This is a lightning round. It's almost thunder round as long as I'm taking. Nightmare Before Christmas, I'll have to say, because it gives you everything. Gives you joy and heartache and everything. So we'll take it. Nightmare Before Christmas.
I like that one, man. I like that one a lot. All right, and this is going to be the last one.
All right.
Cats or dogs?
I know that answer. I thought I was always a dog person. Not that I had dogs my whole life growing up, but when I quit my job, weird little side story, when I quit my job for a living, I watched a friend's home and business for them while they were in New Zealand for 6 months. And what came with the house was a Frisbee business, Platypus Disc Works out of Stevens Point, Wisconsin. But what came with the house and the business was two cats. I had to watch two cats as well. And I never thought I'd be a cat person, but two Siamese cats, and they sat on your lap whenever you sat down. And now I don't think I'll ever go without having a cat. So I think I'm a cat person.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Barry, I can't thank you enough. This has honestly been one of my favorite interviews I've gotten to do on this show. It was a pleasure. Steve. And I think we need to have you on again sometime soon. I'm looking forward. We'll see you at USDGC.
Yes, definitely looking forward to it. And I've kind of been in grumpy old man mode for the last, you know, 15, 20 years, not joining social media and all that stuff. But I think that is going to change here before the end of the year, and you guys will all see a little more of me.
I think we need you, man. I appreciate it. That was a lot of fun, and we'll do this again soon.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks. That was Barry Schultz. We'll be back here in just a moment on PDGA Radio. All right, we are back. Thank you again to Barry Schultz. I love that I got him to weigh in
on the greatest of all time debate. And I'm stoked to hear him say that he maybe is going to get into the social media game a little bit. I think after that interview, cool. I think he'd have some hot takes.
I agree.
But not to the point where they're obnoxious hot takes. They're very well educated and well sourced takes because, man, that guy's been doing it forever. So also.
Can I do a separate? Can I do a separate shout out to Barry Schultz?
Yeah, go for it.
So you know that I run that big mixed doubles charity event in South Carolina.
Yes.
Well, he is from that area, North Carolina.
Well, that's where he lives. He's from Wisconsin, but yes.
Oh, that's news to me. Okay. So he lives in, so when I lived in South Carolina, he was living in North Carolina and still lives there, I believe. Although he and Paige, his wife, are RVing on the road quite a bit. But the first few years that I ran the event, he and Paige would come down and compete, which was super cool because I could promote that we had world champion Barry Schultz coming to compete, and he would always bring me a stack of discs, just like, here you go, just hand them to me with not a lot of words, just here you go, hand these out to CTPs. And then during the Ring of Fire, he would bring a stack of like 10 Innova minis and just throw them like all over, and people would be just trying to collect them. Yeah, like Easter man. Eggs
I love
so,
it
yeah it just it, it made that event very special for a few years when they showed up.
If we're in shout-out territory, I got to shout-out Sean Sinclair. He helped me with a little bit of prep work on the interview, getting to know Barry a little more. So I appreciate that very much, and I'm looking
forward
to...
I'll give him the message.
Oh, yeah. No, I already let him know, but I'm just giving him the public shout-out. But, no, it'll be great. We'll have to have Barry on the show more, and I think we need to just have some more, like, something that we can definitely do on this show, have some more of the legends who have some stories and who people like of this disc golf era, myself included, you know, aren't as familiar with. Because when we get to talk to these players, it's I always leave with a smile on my face, man. So really, really thank you again to Barry for making the time to do that. All right, so other stuff that was on the docket this weekend, Sarah, some other news that... Let's start with the Canadian National Championships, which we did picks for, and
so we have to talk about that.
Yeah. Oh, we definitely have to talk about it because yet again I cleaned up. We both forgot about the reigning Canadian champion Nate Sexton, who once again two-time Canadian champion Nate Sexton. Yeah. I think that qualifies him for like.
Dual citizenship?
Free Tim Hortons for life, at least. I don't
know. Or that. At least that, yeah. Okay.
Either way, congratulations to Nate Sexton. He beat Paul McBeth by 3 strokes. And then over on the FPO side, my pick, Kristen Tatar, is Estonian, but also now the Canadian national champion. So,
yes.
Pretty cool.
And she got Paige Pierce by 7 strokes.
Not so messing around.
No.
I like
that
it.
That was mostly during the final round.
Yeah, yeah. Looks like the putter is, you know, she talked the last couple weeks about putting. Still a little shaky, but man, she had a couple long ones, it looks like. We haven't gotten to see video of that yet because there was a hurricane, and it made landfall up there at Prince Edward Island. And shockingly enough, when you have hurricanes... Sometimes that makes the power go out, and Central Coast Disc Golf has trouble editing. So I think they are a little bit behind on their video coverage, but it should be coming. But yeah, they had the Hurricane Dorian actually ended up making landfall up there as a Category 2. They had to shorten the second round to 13 holes. One of the courses up there sustained some pretty heavy damage, and then Paul McBeth apparently... donated his winnings to the club there so that they could help recoup the course. So
$942.
Hey man, that's pretty rad. Very that was nice. Very yeah. very good thing for Paul McBeth to do. Yeah. I'm trying to think. Did it? I don't know. I shouldn't say it made landfall. I'm not 100% that it made landfall, but it obviously impacted enough to where they had to shorten that second round. So. Mm-hmm. Kind of a crazy event there, Sarah, but where does that put us in the pick standings now?
Okay, so you got 2 points for Kristen Tatar. Yes. You got 0 for choosing Simon Lazat, as winner. You got 1 point for Hannah Leatherman, who ended up in third place. And then 1 point for Thomas Gilbert, who ended up in...
Also third place.
Third place, yep. And I got a whopping 0 points. I picked Paige Pierce and Paul McBeth to win, and then Zoe Andike and James Conrad for top five. And I got 0. So that puts... Ooh, it's close. That puts you at 51 and me at 50. It is
Wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. I thought I was in the lead after last week. I think we have some shady math going on here.
Let's see here. No, you're at 50. No, that's correct. I just added up the columns. You can check my work if you'd like.
I'm suspicious. I'm going to have to go back and listen to the tape from last week. Anyway, good week. Let's then, I guess while we're on kind of tournament results from last week, let's do the hot round, Sarah. We've got some, man, there were a lot of them, at least on the MPO side. What do you got on FPO to start?
All right, the fifth hottest rated round on the FPO side was Sarah Hokum, shooting a 978 at the 2019 Nantucket Disc Golf Open. That was her second round, and she finished in first place by 6 strokes. So congratulations on her hot round and her win. The second hottest round was Paige Pierce. She shot a 988 at the Canadian National Championships, and that was her first round. And she finished in second place. Next was Valerie Mondahano. She played in the 12th annual Hot Kyle Open driven by Innova. She shot a 996. Wow.
Very nice.
Very, very nice. That was her, let's see. Wow, she ended up shooting 14 under par to win by 18 strokes. All three of her rounds are pretty hot, but that 996 was her first round. Congratulations to Valerie. That's an amazing finish. Next was Hannah Blomroos. She played in the Euro Tour number 8, the Nokia Open.
She won.
Yeah, she did. Saw some social media around that. She shot a 1,004 during her third round, but she also sat a 991 and a 970.
It's pretty good.
And she actually won by 9 strokes over Evelina.
Yeah, that's a large margin of victory.
Yes, it is. That's awesome. I love how much they battle. I'm glad they have each other to battle over there. And the hottest round of the weekend was Kristen Tatar playing in the Canadian National Championship. She shot a 1,013, her third round, and finished in first place. Congratulations on that.
All right. So on the MPO side, we have like a boatload of ties. So I'm going to do my best to get through this fairly smoothly. But we will start out with Thomas Gilbert. We already told you he came in third place at the Canadian National Championships. He did that in large part due to a 1066 opening round. Also shot a 1064. So nicely done there. Wow. Thomas, he was our fifth hottest rated round. All right, our next hottest rated rounds, I say rounds because it was shot by three different people, was a 1070. This came from Andrew Presnell at the Elephant and Castle Presents the 13th Annual Dale Roberts Memorial. And also Ryan Kenny and Scott Conway both tossed those at the CADL Presents Midtown Chiropractic Disc Golf Championship. That's a good sponsor.
Yeah.
Chiropractic work at your disc golf tournament. Hopefully you don't need it. all right, and then swinging back up to the Canadian National Championships, Paul McBeth, Simon Lizotte, Nate Sexton all shot 1074s, and that was in that second round in the Hurricane. Pretty good stuff.
Wow.
My bet, Simon Lizotte knows how to throw some bombs in the wind, although I don't know if that was super bomber course. Simon came in fourth, McBeth came in second, Nate Sexton, we said, won it. And then we have two 1082s from two people who have just been destroying the scene lately. Emerson Keith, who you may recall from Pro Worlds, and new dad Emerson Keith, by the way, congrats. He shot a 1082 rated final round at the Dynamic Disc Presents Louisville Open in memory of Tom Old Man McCutcheon. And that was a 1082 rated final round to win the event. And then Joel Freeman shot a 1082 like 17 under par second round at the Nantucket Open to force the playoff with Mr. Ricky Wysocki, and Joel ended up
coming in second place there. Ricky won. And one other little drip of news out of that event, Ricky Wasaki apparently played that event with only like 6 discs. Was like, eh, a little burnout right now. Just going to bring a shopping bag with me on the boat across the island with a few Frisbees. And he still won. Because
I would love
he's
to
Ricky
know
Wasaki.
Which discs he brought.
He posted on social media. There was like an AVR and a pig and a destroyer and a firebird and maybe like a T-bird and a Valk.
Ooh, Valkyrie.
He said he found one of them. One of them he found, though. The Valkyrie he may have found. There was something else. So he actually had like 7. I think he had like 7 in his bag, but he only used 6. Yeah, I know. It's awesome. Pretty. There was another one in there. I can't remember. But anyway, pretty. You know what? Sometimes you gotta refresh a little bit.
You gotta
bit.
Go minimalist.
Sometimes, yeah, it's fun. I actually think it'd be really cool. Like, everyone's always talking about ways that we can spice things up and make tournaments a little different. I shouldn't say everybody always is. Maybe I just am. But I would love it if we had, like, a minimal format tournament. Like,
they do that. They do, like, a one-disc challenge. I mean, not
yeah, but
sanction,
I mean,
obviously.
I mean, among, like, I want, like, a pro tournament like that.
Oh.
Give me, like, a 6-disc pro tournament.
Like Iron Hill with 6 discs?
Yeah. Any hard course with a very limited amount of discs to really see what people can do.
Yeah. I mean, I tend to play better sometimes with a minimal. I mean, I don't have a huge bag anyway, but it makes you... A, it takes a lot of the decision-making out of your shots. You're just
yep.
like, oh, well, I have this one fairway driver, so this is what I have to use. I'm just going to make it work for me.
Yeah.
Sometimes it works out better than you think it will.
I mean, I try. That's whenever I actually play out on the road, it's usually with 4 discs.
Yeah.
I just don't have the space. I pull the Ricky mode. I just don't play like him. So, anyway, those were the hot rounds. And then if we're talking ratings, Sarah, the other big news from the week, Paul McBeth and Paige Pierce once again setting records. Paul McBeth now rated at 1059,
wow.
Highest player ever. And then Paige Pierce at 980, highest women's rating ever. So congratulations to both of them. And then also this kid, Gannon Burr, is 14 years old and is now 1,000 rated. I don't think we were able to confirm if he's like the youngest ever to 1,000, but that's silly. So yeah, Gannon is from Urbandale, Iowa.
Okay.
He's 14 years old. And that was a 6-point jump on his ratings, which is pretty legit. He's also been playing in some, you know, open division stuff, not accepting any cash, but he's got a first place and a second place at a couple of C tiers this year in the open division.
Very cool.
He also won the junior under 15 division at Junior Worlds this year. So
okay, I thought I'd seen his name before. That's amazing.
He's pretty good. Pretty this good up and comer. I mean, look, between like him and you've got guys like Zach Arlinghouse and you know, Isaiah Esquivel and stuff, there's some young campers out there who are going to be making a run pretty soon. So it's a good time for disc golf. Speaking of a good time, Sarah, this weekend we are going to have another disc golf pro tour event. This one is the Green Mountain Championship up at Smuggler's Notch Resort in Jeffersonville, Vermont. 4-day disc golf pro tour event because there are 2 courses there.
Yes.
You know, Sarah, the nice part is we were at Smug's last year for Pro Worlds. We can probably actually speak with somewhat more information on this one about the courses.
Yeah, for sure.
So
I'm
mean,
pretty
look,
jealous. I wish I could go up there again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily want to go all the way over. Like, it's like,
I mean, yeah, you have to fly into Burlington and then drive.
It's a long way
like
from Southern California.
That is true.
It's a very long way. It's like it's complete diagonal across the country. But no, great venue, great tournament, great courses. Really enjoy the Brewster Ridge course. Fox Run, for being known as this big open course, actually has some woods too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there can be wind out there. It's gonna
There's
be fun
lots
event.
Of out of bounds. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And just going, even if you just go and spectate, it's just a really awesome experience because you're in a ski resort. You take a little shuttle over to the courses.
Yeah, they got Fall Fest just, going on.
Oh my gosh, that was so fun last year.
Yeah. No, it's
I bet
good...
the weather is beautiful this time of year.
Yeah, it's the leaves, I'm sure, are... We should be We're close to leaf turning time.
Not in Nashville. It was 98 degrees
not
yesterday.
Not in Nashville. I mean, in Vermont.
I know. Yeah.
Man, so, you know, you go up there and you get some good, beautiful backgrounds and stuff. So it should be good. We've, for the media slate this week, so people know, you've got, live coverage on Smashbox, and, that'll be MPO, FPO every day. Oh no, it looks like they're only going 3 rounds of live on Smashbox.
Oh.
So that'll be Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Jomez will be there on MPO League Card, Gatekeeper once again on MPO Chase, and GK Pro on FPO Lead. And it looks like GK Pro is labeled as next week coverage on the FPO. So there's that's the media coverage. And, you know, Sarah, we could probably talk a bit about this tournament. But it is kind of getting to be one of those more well-known ones. It's getting up there with, like, Maple Hill, where we can talk about it and talk about it and talk about it, but a lot of people really do know this event by now. It's gained some more notoriety just being on the Disc Golf Pro Tour since the tour started. So I don't know. What do you really look for at this event? I like it as the, you know, the venue kind of balances each other out.
Yeah. I think I probably like Brewster Ridge a little bit more. Even though it's really wooded, I think... the fairways are defined and fair. There are some, like we experienced at Northwoods during the World Championships, there's some holes that have OB through the woods that make it extra challenging. Like there's that rock wall that runs around some of the holes. So you not only have to combat all the trees that are there and some of the elevation change, but it's also pretty rocky. The terrain's pretty rocky as well.
Yeah,
but you also have to look for that rock wall. Kind of like Maple Hill as well. And then Fox Run, like you said, it's not just a bomber course. I feel like that kind of course, every hole... I play courses where you could ask me like, oh, what was hole 12 like? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I have no memory of it whatsoever. But Fox Run is one of those courses that I remember, I would say, 15 out of the 18 holes. Because
so what was hole 12 like?
I mean... I'd have to run through the course in my brain.
Just
but it's one of those courses that you like step up to the hole and it's just, I don't know. Every hole has a special element to it and a different challenge. So I really like that about it. And it's not just a straight bomber course. There's lots of out of bounds.
No, it's a technical open course. I mean, yeah. Look, we saw Paige Bierkus execute just a very straight ahead pick your shots kind of game plan there last year.
Yeah.
You know, distance but not crazy distance. It was accuracy. And when you saw you know, Paige Pierce trying to come back in the final round at Worlds, trying to bite off more distance or go bigger, it didn't pan out. You have to be accurate there. So yeah, it'll be fun to see you know, how things pan out this week. Looking at the field, though, noticeable absence in Paige Bierkus.
Oh.
She will not be there this week.
She's doing, I think she's thick in the wedding planning season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I think that's the big thing going on for her and Grady right now.
Yep.
And then on the MPO side, no Eagle McMahon. So that's a notable. Well, his next big tournament, I believe, is going to be USDGC. He was going over to Norway, and then you know, I know last year he didn't play super well at Smugs, so he's probably okay to take a year off.
That's fair.
So, with that in mind, Sarah, do you have who's going first on picks this week?
I believe
it's me,
it's
since
you
yep. picked Paul and Paige last week.
Yeah.
So. All right. I'll start on the FPO side because I want to delay a little bit on MPO so I can think a little more.
Okay.
I have a hard time seeing how Paige Pierce loses 2 weeks in a row. Also, there's kind of the revenge factor of just Worlds last year.
True.
Going into this tournament. So I'll take Paige Pierce.
All right. Man, this is tough. Katrina... seemed like she had a little bit of a rough time, and then Tuckett, I believe Sarah Hokum won by 7, I said? 6, 7? So she didn't have the best showing there. I didn't get a chance to talk to her, but...
I don't know. Can you... I mean, Nantucket, like, some players do kind of view that as kind of the vacation tournament, though.
Yeah.
So hard to... That's true. And, but again, like, but then if you say that, then it almost like I'm not trying to discount anybody winning or whatever. Too, she did shoot nine. She did shoot both rounds below her rating, for what that's worth.
Yeah. That gives me a little bit of pause, though. Let's see. I don't know, but Kristen Tatar is coming off of her win. I think I'm going to mix it up. I think I've chosen Katrina for several weeks in a row, so I think I'm going to mix it up and go Kristen.
I think that's a good pick. She's on a good run right now. I'm going to take, that one's hard. I had a pick and then I lost it. I don't know. The top five on the women's side, I guess I just got to go with Katrina, right? I mean, you left that one wide open there, so never mind. I was overthinking that one, thinking that you took both Katrina and Kristen Tatar, and that's not how this works. So go ahead and make your top five.
Well, darn, I thought you were going to slip up and I could take
Katrina. I almost did.
Dang it. Let's see. I think I'm going to go Rebecca Cox. She has a really well-rounded game. We haven't talked about her in several weeks, but we were talking a lot about her in the beginning of the year.
And she did play very well at Worlds last year.
Yes. And she's just always, like, right there. But I think she's going to break through in the top three spots very soon. So I think she'll play pretty well there this weekend.
Yeah, and I think the interesting part, you know, it'll for her, it's probably a hot start. If I recall correctly, last year at Worlds, she came out with a really strong performance on the Brewster Ridge course,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, she finished in fifth at Worlds, so there you go.
Yep, there you go.
All right. So here's where I'm at on the MPO side. I just feel like it's almost too easy to keep picking Paul McBeth. But I don't think Paul McBeth loses 2 weeks in a row, number one. Number two, you know, I'm going with the revenge factor from last year. Same with Paige Pierce. So as much as it's just like I'm picking the chalk pick again, I got to go with Paul.
Okay. I think I'm going to go Ricky because it sounds like he had a pretty fun weekend. Maybe got his head in a good place. Maybe he'll take 8 discs out instead of 6 this time.
There we go.
So I'm going to go Ricky.
He's traditionally played very well at Smugs as well. I think that's a good pick. Thank you. I will take James Conrad top 5. No question about it.
All right. Darn you. Let's see. Who else is left? I mean, I can't not pick Greg Barsby. What kind of person would I be?
That's true.
I'm going to go Barsby.
All right, don't sleep on Calvin Heimberg this week. I feel like Calvin Heimberg needs to have a reemergence.
Hey, I've chosen him a few times.
It was a general don't sleep on Calvin Heimberg thing, just for the people. I expected him to actually play a little better at Maple Hill, but he didn't. But man, he can sling it out at Smugs, and I expect him to kind of bounce back this week. So again, that's Disc Golf Pro Tour. You can see the live coverage starting Friday at the Disc Golf Pro Tour YouTube channel. Next day, MPO lead from Jomez and Gatekeeper. Next week, FPO lead from GK Pro. And obviously, live scoring from the dudes over at UDisc Live. We love them.
Yes.
Sarah, I think that's it for the show today. Do you have any more shout-outs?
I do.
Let's hear it.
My friends over at Howard Disc Golf, which is a
video company out of Tennessee.
Yes, out of Chattanooga specifically. They just uploaded their round one and round two FPO coverage from the Music City Open. And Sean and I actually did the commentary for round two.
Oh, not listening. Sorry. Not watching. I'm out. Watching it on mute.
I mean, you don't have to listen to my parts, but it was pretty interesting because Sean is the course designer, and it was cool to hear his take on kind of how and why the holes were set up in a certain way. So I thought it was really cool to listen to that part of it. So go check that out, Howard Disc Golf on YouTube.
Nice, nice. Yeah. I will go watch it, and then I hope there's. I hope you guys at some point acted like a real married couple.
Oh, we didn't. We were like total robots.
Oh, man.
And then, of course, our dogs barked in the middle of both.
Well, that's
of them,
to be expected.
Joke, so.
That's to be expected. Yeah. All right. Well, okay. Good stuff. All right. So, thank you again for listening. Thank you again to Barry Schultz for joining the show today. Again, if you have feedback for us, hit us up, radio@pdga.com. Leave us a review, share the show with your friends, help us keep this thing moving. And Sarah, I will talk to you next week for the United States Women's Disc Golf Championship. Yes.
Woo-hoo! Yes, I will be there.
Where's your level of stoke right now for going to US Women's, like scale of 1 to 10?
I have been thick in the house department, so I have not even really thought about it that much, honestly. My brain is elsewhere this year.
All right, we're gonna get you,
but I'm very excited to be in Spotsylvania, and I leave on Tuesday night and get back the following Monday morning. So I'm looking forward to seeing those courses. And oh, and another quick shout out, a bunch of the Innova women team members are running a clinic on Thursday night, I believe,
at US Women's.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, actually it might be Wednesday.
Where can people find information about that?
On the Facebook page. There's a Facebook event page that the local organizing club has created. And you can find all the information about that there.
Okay, cool. Are you part of that clinic?
I am, yes.
Sweet. Who's doing it with you?
I believe we have Kona, Lisa Fakis, Jessica Weiss, lots of, like, anyone who is sponsored by Innova.
So you're like the best player there, and you're going to show them all how it's done.
Oh, exactly.
You can tell them all that I said that.
I'm just kidding.
And I'm sure they'll love me.
That's not true at all. It's like, if all of us end up doing it, it's, let's see, here we go. I've got the actual information now. Thursday, September 19th, 3:30 to 4:30 at Loriella Park in Fredericksburg, Virginia. We've got Lisa Fakis, Kona Panis, Deanne Carey, Holly Finley, Jessica Weiss, myself, Madison Walker, Callie McMoran, Hannah Leatherman, and Ellen Widboon.
Dang, that's a
all
lot.
All-star lineup.
That's star power.
It'll be like one-on-one teaching, maybe.
We'll awesome. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope you have fun out there, but we'll talk about that more next week on the show. And yeah, until then, that was Sarah Sinclair. I'm Steve Hill. That was PDJ Radio. Be good to each other, and we will talk to you soon.